having all of the cryptography and as completely separate layers means that we can very easily add other kinds of signature formats and things of that nature. So we already support SECP in Schnorr and ECDH. We support 25519 signatures. We support X.25519 for key agreement. But we even have an oddball proof of concept of using SSH keys, which include all the various forms of, RSA, et cetera. But more, not so much that these are, that we're trying to offer cryptographic agility. It's more that it's a completely separate layer that's up to the application to decide what they need. So if, for instance, we talked about using SALT for anti-correlation, there's no reason why you couldn't do a BBS plus signature as well. We haven't implemented that, but that's, very deliberately designed such that you can do that or quantum signatures or whatever else as needed. The only cryptography that is required for the base five use cases is SHA-256, and Cha-Cha Poly. That's it. Wolf, are there any other kind of high level points that you want to?
I think I hit on most everything. IETF Cha-Cha 20 Poly 1305 implementations is our symmetrically encrypted node. And then we add onto that, next 25519 sealed message to encrypt the actual, symmetric key. And that's how we doing our key encryption.
We also have, Shamir secret sharing version of encryption so that you can split data into multiple parts and only by restoring a quorum or a quorum of quorums will you actually recover the data, which again this basically covers the flexibility of how all of the cryptography is carefully separated from the layer of the triples and the layer of the CBOR. Open to questions.
If you have any questions, feel free to just type in Q+. But I do have start with one or two questions. So first of all, can you go a little bit deeper and then clarify how elision works? Because for example, when you change something in the document, right, the signature will fail. So how do you actually dynamically elide certain assertions and then using the same signatures? And then the same signature still works.
Yeah. So basically, as I mentioned, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. So as I pointed out, the structure of an envelope is a tree. Every tree is similar to a Merkle tree in that, every node of that tree has its own unique signature or hash. Hashes or digest is the term for it. And then each level of the tree is the hash of those hashes, essentially. So it goes back all the way up to the top of the root hash. Now there are certain transformations. And as I mentioned, there are three of them, elision, encryption, and compression that actually transform the entire branch of the tree where you substitute that node for another node that actually declares the hash of that node. So, for example, a leaf, which is just any CBOR that you want, its hash is calculated, but an elided node carries a hash with it, and it's that hash that's propagated up towards the top. So that when you exchange, for example, a leaf for an elided node, rather than calculating the hash, now you're basically using the hash in the declared hash in that elided node, which is the same hash to carry up to the top of the tree. So by transforming certain branches of the tree, you preserve the top level hash. Now you have changed the document. And so we refer to the difference between, semantic equivalence and structural equivalence. So semantic equivalence is you've transformed the, one version of the envelope in such a way that it has the same, top level hash, but it doesn't necessarily have the same structure. And so, we have tools that let you compare envelopes for both structural equivalence as well as semantic equivalence. Semantic equivalence is very fast. because you're just calculating hashes. Now, certain things like encrypted, which is the IETF Cha-Cha 20 Poly 1305. The Poly 1305 part there is for additional authenticated data, which basically means that's data that you cannot change without making the payload unencryptable. And so we use that mechanism in that case to declare the hash. And in that case, it becomes essentially tamper-proof that particular node can't be changed without invalidating the actual signature. And obviously, you know, if somebody wants to spoof something and change something, they can, but once the envelope, that part of the envelope either becomes unencrypted or uncompressed, which anybody can do or whatever, you compare the hash of that part that was declared with the actual hash that you calculated. And that's proof that the envelope itself was integrity. So, and things like signatures also add a layer of verification. So when you elide something, you're not signing the, for example, the CBOR serialization, you're signing the actual digest at that node of the tree. And so as long as that node of the tree remains intact. And again, you can't change the contents that have been signed without changing the hashes that are stored in the serialized envelope, and therefore invalidating the signature. But does that help your understanding?
Yes. Yeah, so the signature part. Oh, sorry.
Oh, I was just going to add this isn't a clarification, just another way of thinking about it. You know, we talk about envelope being a hash tree, but in fact, it is a hash tree of hash trees. So every triple is a hash tree, and the root of that triple is a hash, and that then in turn is used as part of the hash tree that is above it, of a subject predicate object, up to the root of the thing. So you can basically leave out the details of any tree, and just leave the hash, and everything is still valid.
Got it. So the signature part in the Gordian envelope is actually not one signature. It's actually kind of a Merkle tree, essentially. Is that correct?
Well, it's signing the digest of a tree. So once you have that root hash of the tree you're signing, you know, you take an envelope, you wrap it so that it basically, you're making a meta assertion when you sign. And then, you know, so you have a new envelope, that wrapped envelope, which had the curly braces around it, and that envelope has a unique root hash. And then you generate a signature for that unique root hash. And then you add an assertion to that wrapped envelope, which is your verified by assertion with that signature. And that way, anybody who receives that envelope, assuming they have the public key, can recalculate that root hash from the envelope, because that's not, again, the digest, except for those three cases, elided, encrypted, and compressed, are not actually serialized with the envelope. The receiver, deserializes the envelope, which calculates the entire digest tree. Then they take that root hash. And then they use that with the signature and the public key to verify that the hash is correct. And so, that verifies that the envelope is intact and has not been tampered with.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Will.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Chris and Will. That was interesting. I mean, there's some interesting properties, right, of this structure. But what I'm struggling to understand is, like, what is the interoperability story here? Like, how does this envelope technology play nice with all of the W3C standards? Like, have you explored how a VC can be mapped to envelopes, or how envelopes can be mapped to VCs?
Well, let's talk less about VC. Let's talk about DID controller, because we looked at that a little bit more. So there already is, with the DID documents, sort of an abstract way of looking at the structure, and we can absolutely reproduce that structure. In fact, we can reproduce a lot more kinds of structures than just the node-labeled graphs of JSON-LD and RDF. We can also do edge-labeled graphs and a bunch of other different kinds of structures. We have a research paper that explores how we can represent a wide variety of things. So my presumption would be that if you can't directly interpret a controller document that is in the envelope format, that the resolver takes the non-alighted information and constructs a standard controller document using the abstract syntax for that, and that's what is actually returned to the client if it doesn't, you know, understand doesn't understand the CBOR directly, which does mean that those clients will have, will have to think about, and this would be something we'd have to add to the resolver spec of, okay, what was alighted? Because there isn't really a concept in controller documents of alighted, in the abstract, model. But the resolvers can absolutely handle this type of thing. I did show this and described this to Marcus a while back, and he said, yeah, I think that's, it's definitely, a resolver can definitely construct a JSON, DID controller document. I think some of the other things, when you start talking about verifiable credentials, the context, in particular, the semantic context and all of those different types of attributes, are more complex because you may have, some contexts that are, static and fixed, such as the VC context, but then you might have, an application context or whatever that changes. And you have to retrieve those. We believe we can support that complexity because of the fact that all of the every individual piece of an envelope itself is an envelope. So, for instance, you could put in the predicate, here is the OWL context, here is the JSON LD context, here is the whatever context. And or use known values to compress those types of things, et cetera, which really allows for a lot of flexibility in the ability, to represent everything that is in a verifiable credential. We don't have a proof of concept for that at this point. It's sort of a funding limitation because there's a lot of richness there.
I'd like to add something here as well, because, for example, you just mentioned, predicates, and predicates in the examples I gave, I didn't explain this, but this is explained in our videos, that whenever you see single quotes around a string, that is a known value. And the single quotes, that's basically just two or three byte integer from a 64-bit integer namespace, but has very little overhead in terms of storage for an envelope. But we are essentially starting a registry of known values. We intend to eventually have, all the OWL, all the RDF predicates registered as unique integers in a particular domain. You parse for the ones that you care about. You can still use URLs if you like, because strings can be predicates as well. Or you can basically have assertions on predicates. It's really, because, predicates themselves are envelopes. So, the platform itself is incredibly flexible and very semantically rich in terms of what you can express with it. I haven't, obviously, I do say so myself as the designer of envelope. I haven't seen anything that can do what envelope can do in terms of its richness. That richness is deployed is basically, a question for research. And that's part of why we're here as well, is to discuss with the community what you need and what are the best ways of pursuing it together.
But also, other things that, a lot of other systems are limited, that you can, for instance, only have one type associated with a semantic triple, which would be the quad. Because of envelope, you can have multiple types associated with a particular triple. You can say this is a binary key in one. You can say this is a 25519 public key. In another, you can say that this is a Schnorr aggregated key in another's. So you can have all of this rich complexity that allows for additional levels of context. So that makes it richer than the both the underlying format of JSON-LD or RDF, because we have this ability to do a lot more different kinds and styles of stuff. I do know that W3C has an effort with kind of an, it used to be called RDF Star. I don't know what the new name is. I understand there may be a future version of JSON-LD that might support more, but I haven't seen any of these also deal with kind of the elision cases. And you know, if we'll be tracking, see what's going on in those efforts. But
I think that's when you're saying, Christopher.
Sure.
Yeah. So also, as you saw in my example, so if you look at, like, for example, the proof block of a data or controller document, you know, it's because of the limitations of JSON, you see a series of key value pairs that define the type of the key and the key material itself and so on. With ours, you didn't see that. You just saw signing public key, agreement public key. Those are actually CBOR structures. So those are CBOR structures. If you looked at our specs, they define usually a short CBOR array, which has you know, a series of sequence fields, which includes an algorithm identifier and the key material. In some cases, like public key base, we can actually bundle those things together. So it's an agreement public key and a signed public key together. So that's all you need to exchange to do both encrypted and signed communications. But because we can mix freely CBOR itself, which is self-describing and so on, with the higher level structures of envelope, which is semantic triples, we can choose which way to do this on a much more flexible basis. And things that didn't start out in the envelope space, CBOR structures in general, as long as they conform to CBOR, which is most CBOR structures, then they can be freely mixed into envelopes. And so there's no reason why any CBOR structure that conforms to DCBOR can't be the object of an insertion. So, you know, we deliberately designed it in a layered fashion like that to be very flexible.
I mean, even for instance, you could do CBOR LD, which does its compression taking advantage of some of the unique aspects of JSON LD for JSON LD based controller documents or verifiable credentials, and basically, you know, embed that inside an envelope. You know, you would then be able to do certain kinds of elision things until you get to the point where there's the JSON LD object, which doesn't support elision. Conversely, we showed at least a proof of concept in the slides of the opposite, which is you could put a very small constrained envelope as and encode it in Base64, and then be able to have an individual function be able to within JSON LD document or a JSON document to be able to be elided. Have individual items elided. You know, in particular, I care about the keys. I mean, I think the big, as a security and privacy person, I never want to reveal more keys than I absolutely have to. For instance, on, you know, with my signing keys for signing code, you know, I have one for every, a different key for every machine, I use, so that I can, revoke an individual machine without revoking all of my other machines. But that means that when I sign things, I only want to reveal the public key for the machine that I'm using, but I can use envelope to commit to all of the keys, that I have and then later go, oh, back in commit 15, I can demonstrate that I have committed to this other signing key that I did not reveal until today. I think that's an important, aspect of these types of things. I think the other aspect of things is when we think about verifiable credentials, we often are thinking about the atom that is a verifiable credential in the spec. But in fact, that is not really the way I would describe the architecture. I would probably, call it the verifiable presentation spec, of which a small part of it is the verifiable credential. Because in fact, the verifiable presentation has a lot of structure and things that you can do with it that are, you know, that embed various types of things. Gordian envelope, when it's used in kind of VC use cases, is more like a verifiable presentation. You have a wide variety of things that you can offer. And then, of course, with GSTP, we get some of the DIDCOM type of features as well. That's it.
Yeah, I do have a follow-up. I'll let Stephen talk.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. I have just two short questions, and I have to admit I didn't fully, you know, understand the presentation, but I just saw there, and this might have been because you used the example of controller documents, but I just saw a lot of public keys being mentioned straight out. And I just wonder if there is a sort of like an aspect of this where key rotation becomes now a problem. So that's my first question. I hope that's not the case, right? And the second question is, given the name of your organization, is this used in any sort of blockchains that are currently, you know, having that on the roadmap or something?
Well, I'll answer the first question second. But as far as blockchain commons, most of our support in the blockchain community is at layer zero. So we are, you know, we are not explicitly used in any particular blockchain. Instead, we are used by wallets. So we have a variety of standards around keys, creation of keys, seeds for keys, and we have a, you know, various protocols for doing things like signing and other stuff with those keys, that are adopted, mostly in the Bitcoin community, but, we also have some adoption in, Ethereum, Zcash, and Chia. You know, most of that work is in the Bitcoin community, but it's not at the blockchain layer. This is not a, this is not a layer one or a layer two, function. This is, more for, you know, how do we provide privacy at, the layer zero? We are, to answer the first question, we are very careful about, how we reveal, keys and things of that nature. That's one of the real powers of Elided. You know, we can support a wide variety of the different kind of patterns that are available in a variety of DID methods. Obviously, you know, we demonstrate how you can do a pre-commit and Elide a key. You know, we have a, you know, kind of a you know, non-implemented but, you know, reasonably drawn out version of something called ZID, which allows for a wide variety of kinds of rotation. We can do the equivalent of carry, we can do the equivalent of BTCR, and a few other things. We've not tried to do the equivalent of some of the smart contract based rotations. But, you know, I think the proof of concept is good enough at this point to show the architecture is designed for that kind of flexibility.
I'd also like to add a couple of things. You know, one, Christopher touched on it, but, you know, Blockchain Commons, despite the name of our organization, is not focused exclusively on the blockchain space at all. It's focused on the personal sovereignty, digital privacy, human rights space, and how technologies can be best used for that. The name itself came about when blockchain was the chief way that was actually being kind of advanced. But yeah, you know, our mission itself has always been broader than blockchain based per self itself. So, and the other thing that Christopher touched on is, briefly in the slides, but we didn't really go into it, is, a proposal. It's not implemented or anything like that yet, called XID, extensible identifiers, or ZID, which essentially, is kind of a superset of controller documents that has, you know, very fine grained permission structure, and allows for very fine-grained key rotation, as well as a kind of a hash chain of all revisions of the document back to its inception. So, we have given a lot of thought to things like key rotation and security over time as the lifetime of an identifier evolves.
Yeah, and I will say, you know, just to be clear, you know, I've been, you know, I'm the co-author of the original DID spec, and A lot of the, you know, original concepts were there. I'm kind of, you know, opinionated, and I don't really personally feel that any spec that doesn't do key rotation is a DID spec. That's a personal opinion. And, you know, when those, both those specs went to final call, you know, I raised my concern about, the, you know, the privacy problems of revealing too many keys. But did not, you know, since I didn't have an alternative, I didn't have a solution. I did not block or, you know, push too hard on those types of things. Instead, I stepped away from, for instance, I was co-chair of, this community for 5 years. I stepped away from that and some of the other responsibilities to basically go, okay, how are we actually going to make this work? And that's, when, Wolf and I started puzzling through, okay, you know, what are the pragmatic, things that we can do, which ultimately became, Gordian envelope, GSTP, and some of this other stuff was, you know, we didn't have an answer to the problems that I had raised, and now we do.
Yeah, it was really a matter of thinking it through from first principles, and Christopher has been, you know, obviously the visionary regarding that, and, you know, then relying on myself for my design and engineering expertise, but not necessarily trying to be directly compatible with existing specs. But we are firmly convinced that we can, you know, create envelopes that are fully isomorphic with existing documents, and, you know, so it can be translated back and forth between them, but also can have many other capabilities, including, obviously, we've highlighted here holder-based delusion as, you know, essentially baked in.
Wonderful. Great. Thank you.
Will, do you have one last question?
Well, there's not really time. I was just going to follow up on the interoperability challenges, right? Like, and it's about, like, the adoption story. I guess, like, you know, you guys are coming here, and I'm not doubting that there is a lot of flexibility and interesting, complex features that the envelope enables. But who do you imagine is going to do this work to demonstrate these bridges between the, you know, people working on, you know, I'm a tech provider and I'm working with DIDs and VCs. You come along and tell me about envelopes. Do you expect me to just drop everything and move to envelopes? Or, like, how do I start to explore your technology while not having to completely change my entire tech stack?
Well, I mean, if we, you know, to be very specific, there are a variety of DID methods, that, are concerned about some of these types of issues. So for instance, one of the things that CBOR allows us to do is to have very, very small, alighted, documents. So in the case of, Square's, BitTorrent, based DID method, they're constrained to 1K. We in fact can, you know, basically have a fully alighted, DID document in like 256 bytes that can be, or a little bit larger than that, but, you know, certainly under 512 that can very richly describe, a very complex and deep, document and can handle things like BBS keys that are large, et cetera, et cetera. Because you basically commit you show that you've committed to those values when you do the verifiable presentation, side of things, not public in the DID document. So they have some very specific requirements as far as size. Other methods have very specific requirements around, endpoints. They want to put a lot more data into the endpoint to allow it to function. But then you have the problem of that endpoint then reveals information that would allow for correlation. So you might want to have multiple endpoints or be able to hide aspects of endpoints. In that particular case, they could use the kind of construction that we were talking about, which would be a JSON service that, you know, uses a fully elided envelope as the value for it. So I'm not sure which will, which of those two approaches, you know, a fully native CBOR document, will be, of interest, or, you know, just being able to elide individual values, inside CBOR or JSON LD documents. We think this is an important future. It obviously is not going to be easy in a VC11, DID11, deadlines and context, but we want to throw these opportunities out there and see what, people are, interested in focusing on. We're looking for partners. At this point, we can't do this without, you know, parties that are interested in it. So.
All right. Thank you. Thanks, Christopher. Thank you, Walt, for a great, presentation as well as the discussion. So thanks a lot. And sorry about the technical difficulties that we had early on.
Thank you for having us.
All right. So I think, Christopher has shared the presentation. Wolf has shared the presentation, and then there are links to blockchain commons, and you can go there, if you want to get more information. This concludes today's CCG meeting. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.